What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Happy Halloween, horror fans, and welcome to this week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street. We've got a very special episode for you. This week, we are resharing one of the Trick or Treat podcast series episodes that we have been hosting over in the Fiend Club. We had the Fiend Club vote on this episode to share with you. I'm sure you've heard some ads for the Trick or Treat podcast series. You've probably heard an ad for this week's episode. Anyway, we've been releasing these episodes leading up to Halloween. The whole idea here is that we let the spirits of Halloween decide what movies we're talking about. And this week's episode, we're talking about either Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, or Wishmaster 2, Evil Never Dies. These episodes have been so much fun to put together, and I know that the listeners over in the Fiend Club have been having a blast with them. You can listen to every episode in the Trick or Treat podcast series right now in exchange for supporting the show. There's links wherever you're listening to this episode. You can also head to nofspodcast.com/Fiend Club, but we hope you've been having a happy Halloween. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Trick or Treat podcast series, and as always, stay creepy.
Howdy, fiends, and welcome to another terrifying Patreon exclusive episode of Nightmare on Film Street. We've dug a grave just for you. Enjoy.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to the Trick or Treat Limited Podcast Series. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And we are celebrating Halloween in the traditional way of going door to door, door to digital door, and asking for a trick or a treat. And cinema style, of course.
Of course.
What do we have on the docket this week?
Well, this week, this one's a fun pairing because we haven't seen either of these movies. We haven't talked about either of these, but they have been requested a bunch, especially the treat option. For our trick, we have Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Oh, okay.
Yep. because, I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know, the Hellraiser movies just really aren't for me.
Yeah, no, they're not totally our bag, which is why we haven't discussed them on the main podcast.
There is kind of a Hellraiser-sized hole in our podcast. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I love the special effects. I don't know if I like the movie.
I like the concept. I like the sentiment. I like the monsters. But again, yeah, not totally for me. Now, I haven't seen the third one.
Neither have I.
I haven't given this franchise much of a shot. Is this considered a bad one, I guess?
I definitely don't think people consider it the worst one. I think it's a very kooky one. This is the one that's got CD Man, you know?
Oh, okay. I'm getting on side.
I think it's a DJ who turns into a Cenobite who shoots CDs at people. I
love that.
I think the one-to-one comparison might be that it's like the Jason Takes Manhattan of the Hellraiser series.
Okay.
Yeah.
Controversial.
And, yeah.
And not set in New York.
And for our treat, we have Wishmaster 2.
Okay.
Set in a prison, which everybody tells me is just like way better than it should be. I've kind of been looking forward to doing both of these movies in the podcast, even though I don't know how much I'm going to love either of them. Wishmaster 2 sounds like it's right up my fucking alley.
I vibe with Wishmaster 1, and I heard that this one's kind of fun, so yeah. I'm stoked. I think these are a fun duo.
Yeah.
Especially because we have no idea what we're getting with either.
That's what I was trying
this
to go
with. This
is
a Bertie Bott's every flavor bean is what we're doing.
We've got a couple. Most of the pairings for this podcast series are movies that are either brand new or movies we've been wanting to talk about or clearly movies that we do not like versus movies that we love. And I thought it might be fun to do something that is really a gamble for the both of us.
Hmm.
So we're truly letting Halloween take the wheel here.
All right. Well, it's your turn to draw from the boo bucket.
That's right. I'm going to stick my hand in here and fingers
crossed.
Make
sure you say trick or treat.
Trick or treat.
There you go. Don't eat it all at once.
Oh, can I get a drum roll? What is this?
Well, if I had my soundboard, if I was allowed to have the soundboard in the intro.
You've lost your soundboard privileges. Ooh, this is a big year for tricks, guys.
Whoa!
We are watching Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
I need you to admit something to me right now.
Yeah.
Did you just write tricks when we were doing these?
Kim, I hate to say this. This is your handwriting.
Yeah, but I know that I wrote tricks and treats.
Are you saying you don't trust me?
This is week three, John.
In the tricksters, we got a treat on the first episode. Let's just keep that in mind. Beetlejuice was the treat.
I was just like, we got three tricks in a row, John.
I definitely did an equal amount of trick and treat. I made sure to just alternate. From one to the other. I didn't try and like keep count.
Mm-hmm.
Just always made sure that I ripped up an even number of pages and that I put
feel like
in...
I want to audit the bucket.
I mean, go audit the bucket if you want. I guarantee it's not going to help your odds of winning in the future episodes.
Okay, fine. We got a trick this week. We're going to do Hellraiser 3, but can we stop putting the tricks back in the bucket?
Absolutely not, because if we keep putting them back in, the odds are even. It's a 50-50 shot. Just pick better. This isn't so hard, Kim. Jeez.
All right, to the Hellraiser franchise we go. Do you have anything you want to say before we go watch this movie? Would you like to say anything to the people before we will watch this movie?
I'm trying to think of a funny quote from Hellraiser.
You don't even have one.
Something about suffering. I'm expecting suffering.
In Hellraiser 1, Clive Barker showed you his vision of a private hell. In Hellraiser 2, he took you on a journey inside the inferno. Now, the terror returns in mankind's final confrontation with evil. And this time, it's going to be hell on earth.
Jesus Christ!
Not quite.
We're going to hell, ladies first.
Relax, baby. This is better than sex.
It's so good to be back. Clive Barker presents Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Okay, we're back.
Now, I do want to point out, when I looked up Hellraiser, like, I just put it in the little Google search, the auto stuff that gets generated, Hell on Earth, Hellraiser 3, just does not show up.
Yeah, I had a really hard time finding it. One, because it's 3 as in, like, the Roman numeral 3 and not the number 3.
The better way to do it.
But also, when we drew this movie, John immediately said, you're not allowed to look at the Wikipedia for this movie. So, apologies, I'm probably going to forget character names. I barely hung on to the plot when we watched it.
You just need to know Pinhead.
And I know nothing about this movie beyond what was on the screen.
I gotta say, having not seen all the Hellraiser movies, one of my favorites so far. Now, I did not mind the new Hellraiser, the David Bruckner Hellraiser. I thought that was fun. I thought they handled the mythology in a way.
It was very like polished and sophisticated for a Hellraiser.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't feel like... Like, I also have trouble
with... gooey.
I like gooey. And that movie had some gooey sequences.
Yeah, but it was polished, sophisticated goo.
Hellraiser 3 is gooey in a way that I don't think I like. Very grossly gooey.
Hellraiser 3 is dreamy in a way I don't think I like.
You mean the actual dream sequences?
It's a lot of dream sequences.
The dream sequences are crazy. I can't wait to talk about them. But as far as like a quick little pulse check on where we are, Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth from 1992 is currently sitting at a 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb, a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes, with an audience score of 35. one of the rare moments where we've got a little bit of consensus. And on Letterboxd, it's currently sitting at a 2.7 out of 5.
So I have to say, wasn't too bad.
No.
I was expecting incoherence.
I have been told for years that this movie is just hot garbage, trash. It's got a Cenobite who throws CDs. I gotta tell you,
strongest points of the movie.
That is what I'm here for. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, surprisingly high budget for this threequel. There were car explosions. There was lots of bombs being set off.
Yeah.
There was a club of doom.
Man, we used to have money for threequels. You know, like, I gotta say,
so many extras were given.
Oh my God.
Full Cenobite makeovers. That guy with the pool balls jammed in his mouth.
Yes.
To only just be part of a camera panning across a massacre scene. Just nuts.
There was so much happening in that sequence. Actually, I did see on Letterboxd that one of the extras, basically somebody who gets stabbed with a pool cue in that sequence, is Zach Galligan from Gremlins.
Good for him.
Yeah.
The biggest star in the movie.
What are you talking about? What about Doug Bradley playing two roles?
Actually, he's playing three. He's playing Army War veteran Ghost. He's playing Pinhead. And he's also playing Pillar.
Okay. Okay, Kim. So the opening of this movie starts with a rich asshole who goes into a bougie art gallery. I say bougie, but it's like, it's edgy in a way that, you know, is like maybe fabricated. He sees the Pillar of Souls.
And he buys it from a homeless man who's clearly not affiliated with the gallery at all.
This guy does not look like he is a gallery owner, but that's the thing, right? Like, it's
outsider art.
It's outsider art, and he is acquiring it because he's been drawn to it.
Because he's goth as fuck.
Because he's goth as fuck. He owns a club called the Boiler Room, which is like 5 different businesses smashed into one.
Yeah, it's got an like opulent restaurant in it.
Yeah, it's got a 5-star Michelin restaurant for the rich and famous, and it's also got like a BDSM dungeon style rave section. It's got a metal bar. There is a hilarious moment where Joey, our main character, is walking through the Boiler Room and there's a sign that says Boiler Room, Bar and Grill this way. I'm like, Bar and Grill? Like, is there another section of the Boiler Room we haven't seen? Is there a steakhouse in the Boiler Room? Yeah, our main character is Joey. She's a news reporter who's just trying to get a good break. She keeps getting sent to, like, orphanages and, you know...
But it's irrelevant to the rest of the film. Our main character is Joey, a human being.
That is true. She... The motivation, they tell us, is that she's on the hunt of a good story. She does zero reporting in the movie.
No, she doesn't even carry a tape recorder with her.
She doesn't take notes. She doesn't do jack shit. She just, like, finds a cool club girl to help her break into places. And then,
adopts her.
And then adopts her. Opening of the movie. after he buys the Pillar of Souls.
Some other guy goes to the hospital.
Yes, Joey is waiting in the hospital. I don't quite know what she's there for.
She's filming something.
It seems like she's waiting for a car crash victim or a murder victim.
She's
to
waiting
show
for
up.
An emergency.
Yeah, but she's in an operating room, and there's a great little sequence where the the attending nurse or the surgeon's assistant, once they're starting to pack up and leave, just starts slowly placing out surgery tools. Like she knows something's coming, and we never see her face. And she is not
later. She's evil, right?
She's gotta be. She's not later revealed to be a Cenobite or something, but just as she's done putting down her surgical grade gun, I have no fucking idea what it is. It looks like a harpoon gun. Somebody comes barreling through the emergency room. He's got chains coming out of him. They're dragging across the floor. There's streaks of blood leading from the entrance into the OR. It looks awesome. With him is this club girl named Terry, who's from, I found out, that old feeling, that Bette Midler movie where her parents are divorced, but they're both coming to her wedding and then they hook up and it's a whole big deal. It's a movie that I like.
John, this doesn't feel like Nightmare on Film Street at all.
It could not be further from Hellraiser 3. But the whole movie, I was like, how do I know that girl? Is she in Mallrats? I couldn't place her face until I looked her up later. You and I thought that the person who's being dragged into the OR
was the only other male character we had seen thus far.
Yeah, had to be the guy who just bought the Pillar of Souls. Turns out, no, just somebody.
Who kind of looked like him.
Well, once your face is getting ripped apart by chains and hooks, we all look the same. But that scene was fucking awesome, right? Because Joey just hears some screaming and some flashing. This is just after her cameraman leaves, so she's not even getting this for a news story. She goes back in, and all of the chains are being pulled to different corners of the room. He's being ripped apart. It's fucking great.
It's okay.
It's okay, fine. It's okay. It's okay. I was just this is what we're here for. We're eating popcorn. I made a cocktail. This is what I'm asking for in a threequel.
Okay, so his head did explode, and then I was all right, I'm on side.
Love an exploding head.
And then they show the heartbeat flatline, we really needed clarification.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. Just to let you know, he didn't make it out of this one.
The thing about this movie, and I know I'm jumping through the plot because there really isn't. There is one, but who cares?
Yeah.
It seems really easy to become a Cenobite. All you have to do is die via Cenobite. And if you're I give in to pleasure, they're cool, here's your new outfit.
Some of them don't give in to pleasure, though.
I feel you have to... There's a consent that happens in becoming a Cenobite, I think. Because you become... a BDSM leader.
A BDSM leader.
A leader of your community.
The Cenobites in this movie are just people who happen to be around. It kind of feels
It does, but I feel even if it's post-death, it's post they've been murdered by Cenobite, I feel there's a...
You feel behind the scenes there's some bargain with their soul?
Yeah, in the Hips and Chains world.
What's in Chains?
I said Hips and Chains.
Hips and Chains. The Cenobite universe.
I meant Hooks and Chains, but sometimes words don't agree with me.
Hellraiser 3 is
their spirits are in this land, and they're yo, I kind of fuck with fire and brimstone. And they're here's your new outfit.
I love how pleasant you make it sound. For me, I think it's more of please God, don't let me die. I'll do anything to live again. And they're okay, well, what if you're just in constant pain and you
do
become
you want
a device
CDs
of torture?
For a face?
I don't even know if he has a real name. I think on the Hellraiser Wikipedia, everybody calls him CD Man or the CD or something.
We have to think, okay, this is going to come up at the end of the show, so we have time to think what our Cenobite would be. But we're not going to do it now because I want them to be good.
It's not going to be good. I can assure you, you'll come up with something clever and unique, and I'm it's the beard man.
Well, I can do a Cenobite for you, and you can do a Cenobite for me if you want.
Maybe. We'll see.
What do you think would be easier?
I want both.
No.
Okay, well, we'll determine who our Cenobite selves are at the end of the episode. In the meantime... Let's talk about that weird pillar. Let's talk about Doug Bradley's third character in the movie. Why is he in the pillar for so much? Do you think it was just an exercise to keep him from being in the full garb? Because I got to assume the hardest part of the makeup is the face.
So I had this question, and because I wasn't allowed to look up Hellraiser 3, what I did was I looked up Hellraiser 2.
Oh. That's clever.
The end of the movie ends with, there's a lot to do with the mattress in the second one because they bring Julia back and she's like,
it's pretty
I'm
great.
The baddie bad.
It's maybe the best scene in the second movie.
But in the end, the mattress is back.
The mattress
is some movers are coming, and then the mattress is there, and then somebody gets sucked into it, and then a pillar comes out of it.
Oh.
And I think the Cenobites are kind of like semi-defeated in that one. So it would explain why they're back in this like pillar form. I feel like there's a level of like weakness. We're starting at a loss.
There's a lot in the Hellraiser universe that I just have not bothered to necessarily look into or research.
It's not like it's going to explain anything either, because there was a whole big thing about like a diamond god in the second one, and I was like, okay, flip page.
I do enjoy the second Hellraiser in parts, but I don't like the finale of the movie where we go into like this weird hell world and there's a diamond god. It's like the special effects in the second one are great, and it's got good sequences, and the characters in the first one are good. I think the Pillar of Souls is in pretty much all of these movies. I think it's even in the first movie, but it's kind of just like this weird gothic totem, you know. Mm-hmm. And it has a larger role in the new Hellraiser, the 2022 Hellraiser. But it's unclear to me whether or not it's always just people that they have, like souls that they have captured.
Yeah, it's definitely like Gates of Hell vibes. Mm. Like it's just tortured souls at like the Gates of Hell, but it's like at the feet of Pinhead.
Yeah. You're right, though. It does feel like he is weakened at the beginning of this movie, and he is to regain power.
Well, and especially, too, he's like, come here, come closer to my pillow so I can hook you up.
I need to
like,
eat two girls, and I'll be back on my feet.
Yeah, and he really only does need to eat two people.
Yeah.
And he recruits, like, this wannabe serial killer, who is the guy that bought the...
You think he's a wannabe serial killer?
Yeah, because he's like, I know you killed your mommy, daddy.
Oh, you don't think he just did it for money? Like, you think it's a serial killer?
Probably, but he's kind of a bad guy, yeah. I think.
Oh, no, he's definitely a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he's a bad guy.
Bad guy?
But he's too much of a wussy. Guy. He needs the devil on his shoulder being like, hey, man, don't you like chains?
Don't you like chains? Okay.
That was my Pinhead impression.
It doesn't... I love that Pinhead...
Chains for some... Whips for others.
Pinhead must have been so happy to realize that he was stuck with a frat bro, and he's like, this isn't gonna be hard. Like, it's not gonna be an issue to sort of talk him into being my Renfield.
He's like, hey, kill your girlfriend. He's like, okay.
No, I just, now that I said it out loud, every character in these Hellraiser movies are just Renfields, right? They all want to tap into some weird sort of like unknown pleasure and pain and suffering, and just like the ultimate experience. Or it does also seem like they're doing it in like black magic rituals where they want to gain some sort of power.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that Pinhead generally seduces are people that he sort of entices to being at his right hand, you know, or at my side.
That's the problem, though, when you become the pet of a bad guy. There are also a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, he so quickly turns on that guy. Because,
oh, yeah.
So the girlfriend that JP, the club owner, is trying to, like, bring to sacrifice to Pillar Pinhead,
mm-hmm.
she gets the upper hand in the fight, and then all of a sudden Pinhead's like, throw your boyfriend at me.
Yeah.
And she's like, ah, oh, fine. And she does, and he eats him. So it's just like, he's got no loyalty.
It's a real Feed Me Seymour moment of the movie, yeah.
He does really want blood.
That's all it is. He just needs more blood. And it's interesting that the puzzle box isn't the main thing that attracts him. The puzzle box is actually its own B-plot in the movie that's off with Joey. Like, Pinhead is in the pillar. He's living in the pillar. He's coming to life and talking with JP, but the puzzle box is doing its own thing across town. Joey's been having these recurring nightmares where she sees her dad dying in Vietnam. It's weird. Like, I was like, how the fuck is this gonna relate to Pinhead? Like, I kept thinking that there was gonna be a sequence where we see the puzzle box in Vietnam and, like, there's something, but it's literally just that she's having these incredibly vivid nightmares about her dad's death.
I think it's purely to tie in with Pinhead's human form, the army general.
Yeah. Colonel Doug.
I like it.
Colonel Doug. There is
because he just starts. He just starts appearing in her dreams, and he's like, "Hello, Joey."
He appears in her dreams. He appears in her television.
Hello, Joey.
He's all over the fucking place.
I'm communicating with you slowly, Joey.
And he says the dumbest shit. So he starts showing her scenes, like she's seeing scenes from Vietnam, and then he brings her into another dream where she's in the foxholes in World War I. And he's like, you know, Joey, the dream, the dream of one war is the dream of every war.
Well,
and
that's
we're
how
supposed
we...
to just say, okay.
Yeah, he's like, that's how I found you.
That's how I
you
found you.
You were dreaming about your daddy, and I was like, hey, does she have the lament configuration in her house?
Yeah, like I had to bring her over here into the World War I, and the conduit for that was Vietnam. She was not in either of them, but she was just having a dream about them. The movie just expects you to go like, got it, you know, and move on. No questions. This totally makes sense. And like philosophically, I guess maybe it is something, but like I don't know. Either way, she starts talking with Doug Bradley, Colonel Doug, and she doesn't necessarily know that it's a human form of Pinhead
until he's like, "I'm a human form of Pinhead."
Yeah, there's a whole sequence at the end where they have like a showdown between the two of them where it's not that he's tricked her and like, you didn't know you were talking to Pinhead all along. It's literally that he is the embodiment.
He's
of the
Tom
he
Riddle.
Used to be.
Of Lord Voldemort.
Sure. It's a reference I almost get.
Watch the Chamber of Secrets again, John.
You make me do this all the time. Like I turn my brain off for 7 movies and then I'm back. It's nuts that this movie's 96 minutes and it feels like 3.5 hours.
It was so long.
And I don't know. I guess I'm just stupid. Maybe I was just optimistic. I knew there was going to be a big, huge sequence with Hellraiser or with Pinhead coming back in the club, massacring.
In the club?
Yeah. He's in the club.
He's raising the roof.
It's getting hot in here, so better take off all your skins. So bad. But yeah, like I thought for some reason that was going to be like the whole second half of the movie. I don't know why. Like I thought there would be more to it. Like the club was just going to be like one prolonged sequence. And then we get some Cenobites from there that are hunting Joey across town. And like we do kind of get that, but it is crunched into the last 20 minutes of
the movie.
It's
very condensed. Like it is a massacre at the club. And yeah. And I'd say it's, yeah, like 15 minutes of Cenobite action. One thing I do want to comment about the Cenobites is it's just Pinhead and all new Cenobites.
Yeah.
And they are just location pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just like, oh, we killed 400 people in this club and 3 of them became Cenobites.
He seems like he's doing fine without those other Cenobites.
Yeah. It's sad that he's so lonely. Like, I want to know...
you think Pinhead was lonely?
Yeah, I want to know the inner workings. I want to know the hot tea about what happened to the old Cenobites. Did he get too power hungry and there was, like, some fallout?
Oh, you think the clique has been split?
Yeah, like... Is he
mean girled them out?
Is he sitting at his own table in the hell lunchroom? I need to know.
Stop trying to make flesh happen.
We only wear skins on Wednesdays.
This is good. This is real good stuff. This week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by Diabolic DVD. You already know these guys. For 25 years, Diabolic DVD has been the source for horror, cult, and weird cinema to customers around the world. Diabolic offers a one-stop shopping experience for all your favorite labels, including Cauldron Films, Arrow, Synapse, Def Crocodile, Mondo Macabro, and many more from all corners of the globe. Whether you're looking for the definitive version of City of the Living Dead, or you're trying to upgrade your crusty old DVD of Cannibal Holocaust, Diabolic DVD is the owner-operated small business choice you've been craving. Shop online at DiabolicDVD.com and visit their sister company, Cauldron-Films.com. P.S. All orders are shipped in a box, because they're not jerks, and they know you don't want your Blu-rays damaged when you get them. That's DiabolicDVD.com, spelled DiabolicDVD.com.
Get yourself some physical media, because there's no streaming service out there better than your own DVD shelf.
We might be too old for free candy, but we're not going to let that stop us from having a ghoul time. This October, we're playing Trick or Treat with the Spirits of Halloween over at the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club on Patreon.
Each week, we're pulling movies at random from our spooky mystery cauldron. It's a McDonald's boo bucket. And we're either going to be given a treat, that's a horror movie we really want to talk about, or a trick, a horror movie we hoped we'd never have to discuss in public.
Join us as we let the spirit of Halloween take the wheel and play Trick or Treat with the Nightmare on Film Street podcast, only on our Patreon at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. That's nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. Look, the holiday season's almost here. I'm bummed out about it too. I wish it could be Halloween forever. But Uncommon Goods makes the holiday season less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. I'm on their website right now, actually. They have these really cool, it says adult scary movie night bingo cards. I don't know what makes them adult. Maybe it's just that, like, oh, somebody gets their head cut off. But I could totally use these. These would be great at a home party. Oh, they also have, this is actually really cool. My sister has one of these. It's a 100 horror movie scratch-off chart. So it's like a poster. It's got 100 of the best horror movies ever made. And you scratch them off as you watch them. I haven't met a single person yet who has that entire chart scratched off. I've seen this in a couple people's apartments. And it's actually really fun. It's like having a watch list right there in your living room. If you don't know what to watch, you just look at the chart. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. I mean, honestly, even that scratch-off chart says there's only 5 left. You got a little bit of time. And to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nightmare. That's uncommongoods.com/nightmare for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. The pinhead, the Cenobites in this movie are wild. So we've got CD Man, who is the DJ that just gets killed by a bunch of CDs. Like, he gets a whole bunch of CDs slapped into his face.
He's acting when they're floating above him. He's like, huh? Huh? Don't worry, we'll superimpose them, Gary. It'll look great.
Yeah, and then out of nowhere, once he's dead, just like a bunch of wires and leather just like vroom, just like cover his body, and now he's got Cenobite clothing. We've also got
the bartender.
No, okay. I was building a ramp to end on the bartender.
I'm sorry.
Because the bartender makes no sense. There's no reason behind
it's
it.
It's just ropes, isn't it?
His whole fucking design is that he's like a big, fat, bulking centibite who's holding a cocktail shaker. He doesn't. I was expecting him to like start shaking the cocktail shaker.
It's just a regular cocktail shaker.
I was expecting him to like toss it and it was like a Molotov cocktail or a grenade. Like, nah, he's just holding it. Like,
he just hasn't forgotten. He's just forgotten to put it down.
And is it like, I don't think any of the people that necessarily got turned into Cenobites were especially evil.
No, like, or important characters.
Not at all. The DJ, the DJ is clearly in on JP's like weird sort of frat bro date.
Well, the bartender definitely is.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, like, because he gave
you
that.
You said DJ.
My mistake. The third Cenobite is Joey's cameraman. He's got
who seems like a nice dude.
He seems like a okay guy. Yeah. He's got her back. He's always
terrible actor, though.
Not a great actor. He does feel like James Reimer's like brother. Like, I kept thinking, I'm like, is this James Reimer? But it's not. James Reimer is Dexter's dad.
Okay.
Yeah. He's also the shithead in the Warriors. Fuck him. He's such a good actor. And this was at a period where, like, maybe this is the kind of movie that he would have appeared in. He is a nice guy. He's got Joey's back. You know, he doesn't have any say about what she gets to cover. But if he's ever available, he will shoot whatever she needs to get her her promotion.
Mm-hmm.
He gets turned into a Cenobite, and his whole thing is that his camera has been fused with his face. And he's just like, you're ready for your close-up, Joey. And like the camera moves in and out. But
that'll be a cut.
There was an incredible kill from him, though, that was one of the highlights of the movie, where he like grabs.
He hole punches a guy in the face.
Yeah, like the camera zooms out, punches a hole through this guy's head, and then the camera racks focus, and we see Joey through the hole just going, the whole scene.
Okay, we'll amazing. Say, I will say some of the shots in this movie are actually really well done.
Some of the stuff in this movie is great.
Any of the dual focus shots, you know, the stuff that, what's his name? De Palma loves to do, were done pretty well. Like, they didn't have that weird haze line in the middle. Like, they were cut pretty well.
They did look good.
We had pillar in the background, serial killer in the foreground.
You love calling him a serial killer. I've never thought of him as a serial killer, but he could be.
He killed his parents and he killed his girlfriend. That's three. He's almost there.
Okay.
He attempts four.
And then, yeah, we've got a couple other ones where I think it's like Pinhead with Joey.
Pinhead looks great because it's cut right on the side, like the outline of his head. There's some real ambitious shots.
Yeah, this was like a deep in the franchise sequel that is better than it should be. You know, like the same way that A New Blood or Jason X are like better than they should be. You know, unfortunately,
it's a controversial take, but I agree with it.
You know, unfortunately, Hellraiser Bloodline, the movie that's mostly set in space, isn't incredible. And it's like largely not a Hellraiser movie until the very end. This at least has all the trappings of your Hellraiser movies. And, you know, as much as I don't fully vibe with the whole Hellraiser thing, I do like the notion of people being seduced by the nature of hell, like having an experience.
This
beyond.
Movie wasn't psychological at all. Like, there was
not really.
They did not explore like the psychology of sadomasochism. Thank you.
But I think it's even beyond sadomasochism, right? Like, it's the idea that you'll experience pain in a different way. Like, the way that they talk about it, it's like it's beyond just sadomasochistic that they enjoy the feeling of pain. It's like they live on it, you know? Like, they live on a complete, the way that we talk about how aliens come, they're going to be from another dimension, and they're going to be a life form that we can't even comprehend. It's like the way that they experience human emotion is in a way that we couldn't even comprehend. Because especially when you know that, like, Pinhead is a human guy. Was a human guy who became something.
I don't know her.
Became something altogether unknown to us. Like, I love that aspect of it. I just don't always. It doesn't always translate really
well.
Yeah,
and trashy sequels aren't the well to find the water for that.
Yeah. I've got something fun prepared for the end of this, which is why I didn't want you to read the Wikipedia.
Have you been thinking about your Cenobite?
No, not at all.
God damn. Well, I have one for you and I have one for me.
Oh, this is good. We'll just let you handle this. You just write it on a piece of paper, slip it over to me, and I'll pretend like I said it myself. What did you think of the end of the movie? Because it went on forever.
I felt disappointed in myself that I was like, when's this gonna be over? I want to go to bed.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was waiting a long time for Pinhead to become Pinhead and like do some Pinheady things, and I was just like, eh.
Mm-hmm.
It was ambitious. Like her walking through the club with like that bloody, disgusting massacre and all of those extras dead.
Yeah.
Great.
At like the exact same time watching this movie where people are trying to leave and the door closes behind them and chains come out of nowhere and lock it behind. We were both like, this is like Carrie. Like, Pinhead is just Carrie White, who is just, instead of having a bucket of blood poured on him, is just, you know, like standing in front of some stained glass windows with some candle flames coming from his palms, laughing maniacally. Like, it is straight out of Carrie. It is just the goriest, you know, most hellish version of that prom sequence. And then then it's got another 20 minutes. It's crazy. Like, we go into...
We have a whole, like, bombed out modern streets scenario.
And
the Cenobites are in the streets.
The Cenobites are in the streets. But it's... They don't go beyond that, you know? Like, it gets contained. And then we get sort of sucked into this, like, other world where the human Doug Bradley, Colonel Doug, is having a showdown with Pinhead. And then they kind of, like, fuse together, which looked cool. But like,
Like, the special effects there were interesting. Like, yeah. Where they were like pretzeled at the head.
I liked it. It didn't feel bigger than the club sequence. And like, if
the club sequence was the climax,
that's where everything should have happened. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we could have the Cenobites out and about doing stuff beforehand, and then we finish with the club, the full showdowns
yeah.
in the club.
Well, in Joey's, honestly, Joey's story and Joey's
whole
plot,
whole deal.
Yeah, her whole thing was paper thin at best. So, yeah. Like, I don't really care about her, you know, tying everything up into a nice bow. By the time Pinhead is out, I'm like, yay, finally, Pinhead is out.
Yeah, and Terry, who's been a legit side character throughout this whole movie.
Disappears.
Yeah.
I liked her more than Joey.
Absolutely. She helps Joey investigate all this stuff. They go to the art gallery.
She's got cool outfits.
She turns on her crazy boyfriend and sacrifices him to Pinhead. And then in the club sequence, we just see like her body strung up. And we only know it's her because it's like the same outlandish sort of like comic book style dress that she's wearing.
I thought she was wearing a sparkly silver thing. Oh, well.
I don't know. She's wearing one of the two of them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe.
Wait, so she does just disappear?
She walks off.
Oh,
into
maybe.
The sunset.
Is she girl? She's girl. She's the girl Cenobite. She's the one with the cigarette burns.
Oh, right. Man.
Because her only thing about her personality is that she smokes.
I feel like a fucking idiot. The end of this movie's a huge mess. And there are chunks of it that are just
my favorite
awesome.
Thing is the final shot, though. Because it's just so fucking random. So, Pinhead defeated. Joey's like, gotta get rid of this fucking puzzle box.
Oh, shit.
Yes. So she dumps it in some wet cement.
No explanation for this, right? Like, she comes back from this dream sequence. I assumed that she was back in the club. But nah, she's just like on a random construction site.
And, so she puts it in some cement. And then we like flash forward to what that cement became. And it's a big corporate building. And all of the decor inside of it is the puzzle box.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, this is Satan's corporation.
Yeah, like she planted a Hellraiser seed and like this is the capitalist system is what grew from it. That's an interesting idea and an interesting image.
Is Hellraiser 4 all about lawyers?
Actually, there is one. I think it's Hellworld. It's got lots of lawyer stuff. There's one movie where most of it takes place in hell, and there's like a guy who like types out somebody's sins, and then another guy comes in and eats the paper and then vomits it, and then another guy eats the vomit.
Gross.
There's like a whole big dumb chunk.
I would vibe with capitalist Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Lawyer Hellraiser, where it's just like, I do not acquit, and then he like smashes somebody's brain.
If the end of this movie was the middle of it, and then we had like another 45 minutes, it'd be a great double bill with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The New Generation, where that Hellraiser guy shows up at the end. Do you remember this?
Mm.
Where you find out that the family's like funded by some weird secret cabal, and he's got like this Hellraiser type tattoo, and there's just like real weird satanic supernatural implications, but they don't like fully get into it.
Oh my.
It's insane.
Okay. All right, what's the game, John?
Well, okay, well, what's our Cenobite? Like, what's your Cenobite that you've got planned?
Okay, so my Cenobite is Craft Girl, and I have scissors for hands, and I shoot ribbons out at people.
Craft Girl.
Yeah, because I'm known for my crafts.
Okay, okay.
And you are Garden Guy.
Garden Guy.
And you have hoses for hands.
Okay, I was like, I mean, I do play. I literally looked down at my arm, saw a tattoo that has music notes. I'm like, maybe my hair is guitar strings. I'm like, oh no, better yet, I become the human theremin, and like, and I just kill people with the sound of my electric vibrations.
That's too high level.
These are dumb. Yours is great.
You can hose people down with blood.
I like that.
And then they grow, and they like, you know, like violet. You're turning violet, and then they explode.
Okay. So, I have put together a quick little trivia game for you based on Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Yeah, this is much better than letting me eat candy on the podcast.
Yeah, much better. It is the Trick or Treat Hellraiser
hey,
3.
Hey, wait! Where's my soundboard?
You get a soundboard when we talk about new movies, in case we get too nasty about them. So, this is kind of like a true or false, but instead trick or treat. So, if you think the fact is fake, you say trick. If you think the fact is true, you say treat.
Okay.
Got it?
All right.
Hellraiser 3 had the most successful box office next to Clive Barker's original Hellraiser.
Hmm. did this go direct to VHS? I'll say...
You think it's that much of a trick?
I'll say treat.
Treat is correct. Hellraiser 3 had a... Well, the original Hellraiser had $14.5 million at the box office. Hellraiser 3 had $12.5. Hellraiser 2 got $12. And Hellraiser Bloodline got $9. After that, everything has basically been direct-to-video or streaming. Hellraiser 3 was directed by Anthony Hickox, which is true, who also directed, question mark, Waxwork 2. Trick or treat, Kim. Trick or treat.
Treat.
That's a treat. Follow-up question. Hellraiser 3, directed by Anthony Hickox. That's true. Who also directed Waxwork. Waxwork 1.
Oh, fuck. Trick.
Nope, that's a treat.
God damn it!
Yeah, those are just silly ones. Okay, so the original concept for Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, was a semi-prequel set in ancient Egypt.
Whoa!
Trick or treat.
Man, I hope that's a treat, but it's probably a trick.
That's a treat!
No!
That was one of the original concepts of the movie.
I vibe with that.
Trick or treat, Kim. It took 7 hours to apply the pinhead makeup and prosthetics on Doug Bradley each day.
I feel like that's a 4-hour job. Because it's just hands and head, like, and he's, like, his neck is high. Although, like, the pillar, no, because he would just put his head in a hole for the pillar. I'm going to say trick, 4 hours.
That's a trick. For Hellraiser 3, the special effects makeup artist used a two-piece prosthetic where small plates in the makeup stood up the pins. It took only 3 hours to apply the makeup, around 2 hours less than it took to apply the 6-to-7-piece pinhead makeup for the past two films.
Oh, shit.
Also, Doug Bradley...
Advancements.
Doug Bradley also was able to get some prescription blackout lenses, so he was able to keep the lenses in for longer shoots. Like, that was a big problem in the previous movies because...
Those sclera lenses fucking suck.
They suck. They hurt. And, yeah, he would have to take them out after scenes, and it was always a hard thing to do. Or he would end the day with fucking migraines, right? All right, this one's fun. Motorhead is featured several times in the movie, including the end credits, which I'm sure you heard that song. And Clive Barker later directed a music video for Motorhead, which featured the lead singer slash bass player Lemmy playing cards with Pinhead. Trick or treat.
Cards?
Yeah, music video.
Sure, treat.
Yeah, that's true.
That's Clive Barker, too specific to be a trick.
As I was reading it, I thought, this is too much. Okay, so the original score of the movie was mostly supposed to be like heavy metal. They ended up, after bad audience reactions, changing it to that operatic score that's also not very good.
I kind of liked it.
It would, but it came in weird places.
It was random as fuck, but I dug the vibe.
People were just talking about going out for the night, and it was like, Okay, so which of these bands was not featured in the soundtrack for Hellraiser 3?
Mm-hmm.
Most of these are treats. One of them's a trick. You let me know. Armored Saint.
Mm-hmm.
Electric Love Hogs.
Mm-hmm.
Death Clock.
Love me the Love Hogs.
So yeah, Electric Love Hogs, Death Clock, or Chainsaw Kittens. One of these is fake. Only one.
Okay, so this is going to take some explaining. So in our pre-show that John built before we watched it, we watched Amityville, It's About Time.
That's true.
And I feel like when John made up a band name, he made up Death Clock. So Death Clock is the trick?
You know, I wrote these out before I made that pre-show. Death Clock is actually the fictional band, well, fictional slash real band from the show Metalocalypse. But you got there. Congratulations. Other bands included on the soundtrack, Tin Machine, 10 Inch Men, and Soup Dragons.
These sound like they were put into one of those like 90s generators
yeah.
on the internet where it was like, name my band.
Soup Dragons. What the fuck?
I'm Soup Exploded Kitten Hog.
Okay, last question. This one's kind of fun. Which of these three proposed crossovers is fake? At one time, two of these were genuinely considered.
Okay.
Hellraiser meets Candyman.
I vibe with that.
Hellraiser meets Halloween.
I don't vibe with that.
Or Hellraiser meets the Amityville Horror.
Oh. I feel like you could make a case for both Candyman and Michael Myers meeting Pinhead. So, sorry, what was the last one?
The Amityville Horror.
Right. Oh, well, the dad is a murdery guy. And he's possessed. Does he give in? Like, or is he possessed? Like, is it a consent thing? I'm very big on consent with the Hellraiser series. I feel like it's important.
I don't know if they are. I really don't think that's their vibe.
I mean, for like murdering, yeah, but like being part of the cabal.
I guess you're right. Like, you do have to want it. Yeah. Unless you just happen to be walking by as the Hellraiser Cenobites,
because like they will just fucking
they
rip fuck
you apart.
With the baddies. Like the baddies get to, like, look at they, Julia.
That's not true. They mostly kill bad people, but they also, each of these movies has somebody that needs to be sacrificed to help somebody regain strength. Like Frank in the first movie is just like a gooey pile of guts, and then he has to get his brother's wife to give him corpses so he can regain strength.
Okay, so I'm really stuck on all of these. I feel like they all, you could make a case for all three of them. So mm-hmm. I'm going to say, I want to say Amityville, but Candyman.
Incorrect.
No! Is it Amityville?
It's Amityville.
Fuck!
Yeah, okay. So inspired by the success of Freddy vs. Jason, Miramax contemplated a crossover between Candyman and Hellraiser. Barker, originator of both franchises, recommended against the idea. That's all the info I got on that. And then also, in an interview with Doug Bradley, he stated in 2002 that Dimension Films received two scripts for a crossover featuring both Pinhead and Michael Myers. One of the pitches involved Michael Myers opening the Lament configuration as a child and being possessed by Sam Hain, fleeing from hell, and the Cenobites pursuing him in the present day. Like, he's like a guy who escaped prison,
yeah.
And the Cenobites are the cops coming to get him. According to Bradley, Clive Barker intended to return to write the screenplay while John Carpenter was being considered to direct. The project ultimately ended when Halloween's producer, Mustafa Akkad, rejected the idea due to a negative response from fans of both franchises.
Fans were like, no.
You did pretty good on some of these questions. One or two of them by absolute chance, but you still nailed it. Good work. So do you think this was a good watch? Like, as far as, because this was a trick.
It was a good Halloween watch. Like,
yeah.
Especially for a first time watch. It felt like that feeling you get when you would turn on AMC in October and just watch whatever's on. And
yes.
It's just like the fourth part of a franchise. And you're like, I have no idea where we are in the story. Let's go.
Yeah. There were sequences in this that were truly great. Like things that I actually really enjoyed about it. I had much more fun watching this than I really thought I would. Now, I knew CD Man was coming. And in a movie that has a CD Cenobite, I knew
were you underwhelmed?
No, I knew there'd be something kooky, right? Like this, this might be our bag for a Friday night. This might be the movie.
Now, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you might know the T on why Clive Barker is not involved in this at all.
Oh, well, he just didn't want to be.
Now, okay.
It says Clive Barker presents. He has an executive producer credit. I did read this in the
Wikipedia. Character's based on.
Of course, character's based on. Yeah, that's going to happen no matter what. This seems like kind of a sneaky Weinstein thing, where they brought him in to consult, like, ooh, we're having some trouble with the finale of the movie, and they had him come in and look at the working cut.
Like, you took the water bottle, you were part of the meeting!
Basically, yeah, like, they had him give just a couple notes on the finale, and then he got an executive producer credit because of it, so they were able to put Clive Barker Presents at the front of it.
Mm.
Like, 100% that was manufactured. There's no way he was happy about it.
Sneaky.
Like, I'm sure he got paid to show up for, like, a one-hour meeting and, you know, whatever. But still, if people hate the movie, then it's got his name all over it. But that's kind of the tea on that one.
That's fun.
Yeah. Watching this, though, did remind me that we should probably be doing the Waxwork movies soon. I know you really like the first Waxwork.
Mm-hmm.
And Waxwork 2 also has Zach Galligan, which is definitely why he had a cameo in this movie. Same director.
That makes sense.
There's a fun little cameo as well while they're going through the TV channels, while Joey's flipping through the TV, that she goes across an interview with Anthony Hickox. Like, you can see the name at the bottom, like, writer-director, Anthony Hickox, like, in some sort of TV interview. But yeah, this was a fun watch. Are we rating these?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Was that a trick or was it a treat?
That was a trick. Oh, no. It was. You know, as far as tricks go, that was a real treat.
Okay, well, I've got a better idea. Compare, what candy would this be in the trick-or-treat bag?
Oh, this is when you think you're getting a grape-flavored something, but it's actually black licorice.
That's a trick, John.
I know, yeah. But as an adult, I'm starting to come around on black licorice.
Okay, so you know what I'm going to say it is? I'm going to say it's one of those Tootsie lollipops, whereas like the lollipop part is good, but then once
but
you
then
get
you cut your tongue?
No, then once you get to the Tootsie part, you're like, ew, brown, and you throw it out.
Oh man, I would always try and do the you know, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop, and it was always the hardest.
Like, you actually counted?
No, I didn't. I always lost
count. So you boring loser.
Yeah, but like, I would try and get to it. I would try and challenge myself not to bite into the candy before I got to the Tootsie Roll. It never ended up working.
I fucking hated the Tootsie Roll.
I didn't mind the Tootsie part. It's not as good as the candy on the outside.
Gum only. Either it's just plain lollipop or there's gum in the middle. I don't want no fucking chocolate surprise. But it just doesn't go with candy.
I always cut my tongue on those things. Like, I would, there'd be like an air pocket or something, and then you'd lick away the air pocket, and then there would just be these jagged pieces of sugar, and I always cut my tongue. Like, no matter what, by the time I got to the Tootsie Roll, it tasted like blood, and that's why I think you're right. This is the perfect Hellraiser candy. Oh, what a fun watch. I'm glad this turned out. I was really slightly dreading watching this, and I had a good time.
Same.
Yeah. So thank you so much to the spirits of Halloween for picking this one. And thank you for listening. Thank you so much for your support here in the Fiend Club. We hope you've been enjoying the Trick or Treat podcast series. We hope you've been having a killer Halloween season. We've still got plenty more to go.
If you want to talk Halloween candy or what you've been watching from your Trick or Treat sack, join us in the Patreon chat section. We have some new community groups where we have started some fun convos. Or in the Discord, you know where that is. But until next week, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
We've spared your soul this week, fiend, but only because you've earned it. More exclusive content can be found lurking at patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Get ready to scream, shiver, and maybe even lose a little sleep. It's time for Nightmare on Film Street's 31-Day Horror Challenge. 31 horror movies, 31 days, 31 chances to win a spooktastic prize pack to help keep Halloween alive 365.
This year's prize pack includes goodies from Nightmare on Film Street's new upcoming book, Cocktails from the Crypt, 4K remastered copies of Demons and Demons 2, a Stephen King Blu-ray box set, Spirit Halloween lunchboxes, pumpkin carving kits, Halloween CD soundtracks, including the long out-of-print Monsters Speak, Nightmare on Film Street sticker packs, and more.
The rules are simple. Head over to nofspodcast.com/Halloween. Download the 31-Day Horror Challenge Movie Guide and post your Halloween watch list on social media using the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge to make this Halloween a night you'll never forget.
That's nofspodcast.com/Halloween and the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge.
What's your favorite scary cocktail? If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.